coming up on the Dr. John Deloney Show.
Instead of talking to me and having a difficult conversation face-to-face, he told me via text. And it's really frustrating to me that there's those lies and deceit.
Well, but hold on. Do you respond to him in text with that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's on you. That's on you. You're the one responding with the emotional stuff. He's just giving you data. What up, what up, what up? This is John with the Dr. John Deloney Show. Taking real calls from real people about their mental and emotional health, their marriages, their relationships, whatever you got going on in your life. If you want to be on this show, we get hundreds and hundreds of emails a day from all over planet Earth. Go to johndeloney.com/ask, or give me a buzz at 1-844-693-3291. That's 1-844-693-3291. We'd love to hear from you and get you on the show. Let's go out to Salt Lake City and talk to Emily. Hey, Emily, what's up?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course, thanks for calling. What's up? How can I help?
My husband is, so we've been married for 8-9 years now, and my husband ends up, whenever he has something difficult that he needs to talk about or any confrontation, he texts me instead of talking to me, and it makes it difficult for us to build our emotional intimacy. And so I'm basically trying to understand what I can do, because obviously I can't control my husband, but what's something that I can do to build that emotional intimacy and help him to feel safe, so then that way he can talk to me instead of texting me if ever there's a difficult conversation.
Yeah, that's my first impulse is one of two things. Either, my goodness, after a decade, how are we just now getting to the fact that your husband is as emotionally immature? I had a conversation with my child, like my middle school child, about text etiquette. And in fact, this, we went on a long, long ruck, me and my son, this weekend in the woods, like for miles. And we talked about, like, hey, don't ever text something important. Those are four in-person. Don't text somebody, hey, I like you. Like, that's an in-person conversation to have. And it's just me trying to teach him how to be like a grown-up, right? So it's either that, or you have helped co-create a world where, man, he better not tell you what he needs or have a hard conversation because you blow up on him, or you get cold on him, or you change the dynamic. Which one is it? Maybe it's a combination of both.
I think it's a little bit of a combination of both. Okay. I think what happens is he tells me, he kind of like blindsides me a little bit. One example is like he has a porn addiction, and he was really clean for quite a while, and then he relapsed. And so instead of like talking to me and having a difficult conversation face to face, he told me via text. And so I honestly believe like the opposite of addiction is connection. And so I was basically just trying to say, hey, I love you. I'm here for you. Like, you're not alone. At the same time, though, I wanted to express my feelings. And oftentimes he takes that as like an attack. And it's not that I'm attacking him, but basically I'm saying like, look, like, I don't like the lies and the deceit. Like, it's not like the addiction itself, is the thing that like is underlying. And it's really frustrating to me that like there's those lies and deceit. And so maybe it's my approach to,
but hold on. Do you respond to him in text with that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. That's on you. That's on you.
Yeah.
So I mean, if he has the courage to, and again, I'm using courage very liberally here, right? But I'm thinking of a guy who has no skills and on how to say out loud, hey, I screwed something up. Or hey, we've been working on something. I've been working on something. I know we've been down this road before. Ugh, here we are again. Right?
Yeah.
And having a wife, it's like, well, oh my gosh, if you like, I'm just gonna text it, hey, I slipped up and screwed up. If your response is, thank you so much for telling me, I can't wait till we can talk about this in person, I'll get the kids to bed tonight. Let's plan for 9 o'clock. That is a much different than you're the one responding with the emotional stuff. He's just giving you data.
Yeah, you're right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I guess if I'm you, this is going to sound backwards and you might get pissed at me. So if you do, like, come back, okay? Tell me I'm an idiot. But if we're trying to solve this, if this issue, okay, under is the intimacy issue. And by the way, the opposite of addiction is connection. That's some great ideas from Johan Hari. I love the idea. It's more complex than that. I think it's a good place to start, but it's not apples to apples, right? But I do think, yes, getting rid of secrets in our home is a good place to start. And people who struggle with pornography are often struggling with not just wanting to get off. They're struggling with being completely alone or having a life where they are dead. Like, they're not living, they're not alive in the life they have, right? And so it's a way to get your heart rate up and also not blow your marriage completely up, right? Or so they think. So yes, I agree with you, but I would, so let's do this. Let's solve for the connection piece. And the only way you can connect with another human being is to be vulnerable with him, period. Mm-hmm. Whether you're using words to connect vulnerably or you are shoulder to shoulder, both digging a hole and you're both sweating and you're both exhausted and you see somebody like getting after it and you're getting after it. That's how men all often show vulnerability to each other. That's still vulnerable. That's still like I'm putting myself out there, right? So you call him or get in touch with him in person and say, hey, I'm sorry. Like, I've made having this hard conversation. Are you admitting something? Are you telling me something hard? I've made it really difficult on you, and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you if you need to text something cool, but I'd love you to text, hey, we need to talk tonight at 9 o'clock. That would be better. How does that sound?
Yeah, no, I think that's something that I can control, and I think that would definitely improve our emotional intimacy, and it's something that I can, you know, I can handle that, and I can change kind of the story.
It will feel like you're not winning, though.
Yeah.
Because when he puts data on the table, I looked at porn again last night, and I'm so sorry, and you can bomb him with emotional reactivity, it feels good in that little moment, right? It feels righteous, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you're going to have to let your power go on this because the goal is not to, I told you so, or you should have. The goal is a safe, warm home.
Yeah.
And if he continues to violate you in that same, like your agreements, your values, if he continues, this isn't a free pass. It is a safe and warm, hey, I'm not going to be a part of this.
Yeah.
But it's understanding that emotional reactivity almost solves nothing ever. Right. Ever. Yeah. I'll also say this, probably 5 to 10 times. I'm thinking back just real quick over the top of my head. I have written a letter and read it to my wife because I didn't want my thoughts to get all jumbled up and me to start spinning. And if you've listened to this show for more than one episode, you know, I just can kind of ramble sometimes. So I've written it down. But that allowed me to get all my thoughts out. And then I set the letter down and now we're connected. And so I think that can be a helpful tool sometimes. It just can't be used in exchange for actual human connection there.
Yeah. No, definitely. I appreciate the honesty. I'd rather you be honest and not sugarcoat things. And that's one of the reasons why I just love listening to your show.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I would love to see you respond with, let's talk about this tonight at 9 o'clock. You put a date on it. You put a time on it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Yeah.
And that also gives you some time to get really, really mad and fired up and angry. I don't want that part of you to be gone. If you're a fiery person, you're a fiery person. That's why he married you. But it's not helpful when somebody's feeling ashamed about something.
Yeah.
And it may be
I never want him to feel like I'm fueling that shame or that guilt. Because right. I love him and I want to connect with him. But yeah, I can definitely see how I have been kind of fueling that instead of taking ownership and saying, hey, look, like, let's talk about this later tonight.
I also want to throw something else out there. Is this cool?
Yeah.
I want you, absolutely. I've been hearing this more and more and more. And there's some calls that I take that don't make the air because I botched them in some way, or it doesn't work out. But and they're private conversations that I have too. This idea of my husband's a pornography addict. That's how you introduced him to me.
Yeah.
And it can create a world where, you know, it's just kind of just the way he is. And I reject that. And so I think it's fair to say, if you're going to stay my husband, you're going to stop looking at pornography. If that means we get rid of the internet connection in this house, if that means we cancel every subscription, that means you get rid of your smartphone. I don't care what we have to do. If you're going to be married to me, this thing matters to me so much, it's not an option for you.
Yeah.
And if you have to go to 30-day inpatient rehab, whatever you or want think you have to do, you see what I'm saying? Because the way you described it to me sounded like this inevitable passivity.
Yeah.
Well, he's just a guy that hits me sometimes when he gets mad and I don't really like it. Like, no, right? Don't do it. Don't do that. So, well, he just has got an addiction to this. No, he's a guy who is struggling with X, Y, or Z. Can you get addicted to pornography? Absolutely. Is that an excuse? No, it's not. Just not.
Yeah. No, I definitely appreciate the candor and the honesty. And I think that is a difficult conversation I need to have. I know he was clean for about, you know, a year or two, but then I'm noticing like some signs, and I kind of addressed it to him. I said, hey, I'm kind of noticing X, Y, and Z. Like, have you been looking at porn again? And he's like, no, I haven't. And then a couple months later, he's like, actually, I have.
Right.
And that's when I was feeling like, oh my gosh, like I'm more mad about the fact that he lied to me when I confronted him about it rather than him relapsing. Right. So, but I do need to.
But hey, you're allowed to be upset about that. You're allowed to be royally pissed off about that.
Thank you.
Don't think that I'm telling you not to be.
Yeah.
But, and he's going to have consequences, right? Like that's part of it also. But, that anger is simply pointing you to a place. It means you care about something, right?
Yeah.
Then the next question is, what are we going to do about it? And so you get to look him in the eye and say, if you lie to me again, you have to leave.
Yeah.
Because it makes you question everything, right? It makes you question that relationship that he has with that coworker that's kind of funny and kind of flirty, but you just blow it off. It makes you question how he spends money. It makes you question everything.
Yeah.
Way more so than the him going to website X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I the takeaways for me here are you stop responding to him in text. You give him a date and time when we're going to talk about this in person.
Yes.
And in almost a context. Cool. I'm going to take care of this and this. You get the dishes. I'm going to put the kids to bed. And then we're going to have this conversation. And then the next one is if he starts talking and you feel yourself getting emotionally reactive, say, from this point forward, I've made an unsafe place for you to talk. And I'm sorry, I might put my hand on the table and say, I need 5 minutes. I'm going to go walk around the house. I'm going to go outside in the backyard and just take a lap around the backyard. And then I'm going to come back. But you can't leave me either, right? And so let's just set some ground rules up for communication and some back and forth. But I think y'all are on the right path. Do I think you need to apologize for the fact that he is struggling with pornography? No, not at all. I think an apology will get you I've participated in this context where you can't put stuff on the table and I'm going to quit doing that. I get so mad at you for talking to me in text and I respond to you with these long, massive texts. I'm going to quit doing that. Let him know this behavior is stopping and this one is beginning so that everybody's on the same page. Man, I think you rock and roll from there. Good on you, Emily. Thanks for the call. Your call is really going to help a lot of people. Your candor and just your honesty. Thank you so much for that. Hey, everybody. We'll be right back. I am super grateful for my Halo app. I listen to it almost every single day, and I'm not an app guy. If you ever listen to this show, you know I'm not a cell phone guy, but I love Halo. Halo is the number one prayer and meditation app in the world. Hallow has 10,000 plus audio guided prayers, meditations, including meditations and prayers and daily psalms, amazing speakers, some of the greatest speakers and celebrities and athletes on the planet, you name it, they are on the app. And there are prayers and meditations for mental health, including meditations to help people who are struggling with addictions, wounds, stress, anxiety, infertility, recovery, grief, and more. There's even an entire section for kids, including Bible stories and meditations to teach kids how to slow down and be present. And this is kids of all ages. I especially love the meditative music. Lo-fi, man. I'm a huge lo-fi fan, and their music is amazing on the Hallow app. I write to it. I read to it. It's incredible. If you're looking to find out what this whole faith thing is about and you don't know where to begin, or if you've been wandering down this faith journey for a long time and you want to go deeper, check out my go-to app, Hallow. And Hallow is taking care of you as a listener of the Dr. John Deloney Show. You get 3 free months of Hallow. That's everything included by going to hallow.com/Deloney. That's 3 free months of the app at Hallow, hallow.com/Deloney. All right, we are back. Listen, money and marriage is the getaway. The marriage retreat of the century is back. We have sold out of VIP. We've sold out of Platinum. We only had a very few seats left, and then they opened up a few more, and now those are almost gone. Super rad. Listen, October 24th through 26th here in Nashville, Tennessee. Actually, right outside of Nashville in Franklin. We're going to have 2.5 days. Me and Rachel Cruz and some other surprise guests coming and going. Built-in time to practice what you're learning. This is a marriage retreat where we're going to talk about everything. Finances, sex and intimacy, how to fight, how to communicate with each other, how to handle tough issues when they pop up. Lots and lots of Q&A. I know that one of the big reasons people come to this is access. If you leave this weekend without questions answered, it's because you didn't ask them. We answer everybody's everything. There's an over-the-top date night experience that's incredible. And if you want to stay one more night on your own and just make it, go downtown and enjoy Nashville. It's just an amazing, amazing city. Tickets are $799. It's amazing. It's about half the price or more, one-third of the price of some of these other marriage retreats. And I promise, dude, it's just amazing. RamseySolutions.com/getaway. All right, let's go out to Columbia, South Carolina and talk to Cody. Hey, Cody, what up?
How you doing, Dr. John?
Good, man. What are you up to?
Man, it's so weird to hear your voice and not be able to see your face.
Most people would say that you're getting the better end of that deal. Not a handsome man, Cody. I'm not a handsome. I got a face for radio. So what's up, dude?
Oh, not really. Well, this is kind of a hard one. So I'm sure you read my question, and my wife has BPD.
I haven't. Go for it.
Okay. So my wife has BPD.
Okay.
If you're familiar with that.
Borderline or bipolar?
Borderline.
Okay. Very cool.
So when we first met, we were both very clear on what was important to us in a relationship.
Do me one quick favor, Cody. Let me tell everybody, if you're listening to this, just a quick way to understand borderline personality disorder. Borderline, your emotions feel 1,000x of what they may be in reality. And so when you're upset with somebody, you hate them. And when you like somebody, they're the greatest person who's ever lived. You're in love. Everything is so deep. And it is this vacillating back and forth. And it's very tough to live in that body. And it's also very tough to be in relationship with that person. Does that sound familiar, Cody?
Yeah, that is exactly it. And my therapist says that it's like your entire day, there's just sticky notes falling from the sky and you're trying to read every single one of them.
It's a great way to, that's a great analogy. The borderline folks that I've been with over the years, I love them. Love them. And whoo, man, right? Man. So,
oh, yeah.
Okay.
And like you said, it's like when they love you, you are the only thing in the entire world. But when they're mad at you, like, oh my gosh.
Like, I think I might get murdered, right? Both.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. But again, I think the message I want people to hear from borderline is therapeutically, they're one of the toughest clients to deal with. And in a relationship, like, man, some of my favorite people on the planet. And man, it could be tough. It could be tough too. All right. So you married somebody with borderline. Okay. Go for it.
Yes. And early on in our relationship, we just kind of sat down cause we're both divorced and I was barely divorced. But so we were like, listen, like we've both been divorced. We're divorced. We just want to be clear cause I'm 34 now and she just turned 30 in December. Actually, we had the same birthday, but so we were like, listen, we don't want to do this again. We want to be very clear on what we want in our relationship. So we just kind of sit down and went over some stuff. Well, recently she has started DBT therapy.
Perfect. That's for those listening, it's dialectical behavior therapy. It's the gold star for, it's one of my favorite therapies, period, but it's the go-to gold star for people struggling with borderline. Okay. Good call.
Yeah. And if I ramble, reel me back.
You're good. I'm tracking with you. I just want to make sure somebody who just picked this up and doesn't know anything about DBT or doesn't know anything about borderline can track with us. So keep going.
Okay. And just a lot of the things that like earlier in our relationship, like were fantastic. Like the sex was great, you know? And that was one thing like we talked about early in our relationship, because that was a problem that I had with my first wife. You know, it was always like it was supposed to be there, but it wasn't there. And, you know, all this stuff. And we were like, yeah, like we're both into it. We're, you know, it's going to be crazy. And it was pretty good. And then she started the DBT and it's brought up so many things from her. She has I guess like a lot of other people with BPD, she has a lot
traumatic
of sexual
past.
Trauma in her past.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of that she had suppressed.
Okay.
Well, now with the DBT, it's bringing a lot of that back up.
Okay.
But then I get caught in the middle of this weird cycle that is she can want to have sex, but then in the middle of it, her trauma kicks in.
Yeah.
But then if I see it and I stop, then she also gets this, I'm not good enough for him.
So Cody, this is about being in love with somebody, being married to somebody who is a sexual trauma survivor. This is not unique to borderline. This is somebody in real time working through their stuff and also seeking intimacy with their husband.
I guess,
are we talking multiple years? Are we talking the last 6 months?
It was when she was in her earlier 20s.
No. I'm talking about you and her right now.
Me and her. We've been together for about 2.5 years. And I forgot, we actually have an 18-year-old little girl, 18-month-old little girl.
Yeah, I was going to say, y'all got married and then had a baby real fast, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, she got pregnant about 6 weeks after me and her met.
Okay, and then you got married and then you had a kid.
Yes.
Okay.
We actually had a kid and then luckily we actually fell in love with each other. It wasn't one of those deals that turned into like, hey, we're going to get married because we have a kid. We actually ended up falling in love with each other. And we're like, you know what? We have a kid. We actually love each other. Let's just get married.
Awesome. Okay. I totally don't believe you, but I'm tracking with you. That's it. I totally love that. That's your story. So good for y'all. Okay. So here's what I'm going to tell you right now. You're going to have to exhale, brother. You're going to have to have some loving and compassionate patience.
Yes.
Okay. This isn't the end of time. And this is not, you are so terrified of this replaying what happened in your first marriage for whatever reason. I get that. That's your lived experience. But I want to tell you, you are married to somebody who's experienced what my guess would be with some really significant sexual trauma.
Yes. Multiple people.
And there will be all kinds of starts and stops and guilt and trying, and I want this to be right, but it's not. And my body's doing this, but my mind wants this, and my heart wants this. She's going to need you to hold her hand and look at her and say, I'm with you every step of the way, as wonky and as weird as this is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's some of my thing is like, I don't want her to feel forced. But then I also don't want her to have that feeling of she let me down.
Right. And
it's like, I get stuck in between those two.
Both of those things you just said, you can't control either of those things.
Yeah.
That's not true. You could try to make her feel forced. You could put that on her. But you trying to get inside the emotional reactivity of somebody with borderline personality disorder, much less any sort of trauma survivor, and you try to mitigate and control that, man, that's like standing in the middle of a hurricane and trying to tell the wind where to go. You can't.
Yeah.
What you can do is to create reinforced structures around knowing things are going to get tough. There's going to be times I really want to be intimate with my wife and we're on the way. And then all of a sudden, like something catches fire and it stops. Is that going to be frustrating? Yes, of course it will be. And anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. And when you start making her healing about you, oh, and me, and I want, dude, that's when you get into some dicey land.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think how long has she been in DBT? Cause there's, it's pretty systematic.
About 3 months.
Okay. I would give it another 90 days, about another 3 months. And then I would see if her therapist says it's okay. Maybe 60 days, 30 days. I would ask her therapist when it's okay for you to start participating. Because what y'all are going to do together is learn. So for those listening, DBT is basically that it's learning and your body is telling you everything opposite of this. That's what makes it so hard. If you truly have borderline, that everything is black and white. He hates me. He loves me. And that basically you have to teach your body that the way you're feeling something is not accurate. And that's really hard to do, right? So imagine you touching a stove and your body's like, this is hot. And you have to teach yourself, no, it's not, right? So you're teaching yourself that everything's not black and white, but that two things can be true at the same time. We're having a disagreement and he still loves me,
yeah.
Right? That's what you're doing,
yeah.
Right? Or I'm woke up today and I'm in a bad mood and I don't like him. And he is still my husband and the one I chose, and I'm going to love him forever. Both of those can be true. And for the DBT body, it feels insane, right?
Yeah.
Y'all are going to have to learn how to communicate with each other as this thing, as her treatment and her healing moves forward.
Yeah.
Okay?
And I guess that's what I'm trying to. It's just everything. I guess everything. What happened? I guess when we first met, you know, we went over all this stuff. When we were like, "Hey, this is who we are. This is this."
None of it matters.
And then
none of it matters.
No, it at this point it doesn't. You know, and that's the.
Bro, listen. You had a baby.
I'm trying to navigate.
You had a baby. You got married. Y'all both have your divorce shame. She has a diagnosed. I'll go as far to call it a mental illness. She's got a personality disorder, a very challenging one, and. Underneath all of that, she is a sexual trauma survivor.
Yeah.
All of it. And what is your child, boy or girl?
It's a girl.
Okay. I don't know how or why. There is an extra I can hypothesize. There's an extra sensitive radar that goes off when a trauma survivor, a sexual trauma survivor, has a daughter.
Yes.
Okay. All of this is in a cocktail. And you are just like, hey, can we just like watch Netflix and make out? Right?
Yeah.
And
I know.
And what I'll tell you is that day will come, not today.
Yeah. Yeah.
What your daughter needs is you to be I'm trying to think of the right word. Becky Kennedy used it the other day, Dr. Becky, and it was awesome. I love the word sturdy.
Uh-huh.
A sturdy dad. Not one that's a robot, but somebody who's sturdy. And your wife needs somebody who's sturdy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the hard part, I guess, too, is sometimes, like, she can't control sometimes what she does, and sometimes she loses it in front of our little girl. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. It's just like you, and it kills me.
Sure. Well, and that's there are certain things that that's why I want you to be a part of that therapy. Because there's certain behaviors that I don't care what the illness is or the diagnostic is, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Right? And so y'all need to work out in the presence of a neutral third party, what are my action steps when she violates that? Because I'm not just going to sit there and have my daughter X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
You can't say that in front of her. Or you can't hit me like that. Or you can't scream like that in front of her. And when it comes to violence, and it comes to language, when it comes to sexually acting out, which is sometimes a feature of borderline, like you can't just go do just because, right? So we have to have some sort of communication where you know there's an X and a Y and a Z to this.
Yeah. Yeah. And the DBT seems to be helping her with that. She's come to a lot of realizations.
Right. But the, you come to a lot of realizations, but then the grit is in the practice and the working it out.
Yes.
And that part's really hard, man. That part's super, super hard. It's a big challenge. But here's the thing. You go be in counseling with her as much as she'll allow and her therapist will allow. Okay. Now you can't be a part of the DBT training. I mean, a part of the program, but you can go for additional relationship counseling. And what y'all are doing is, okay, how are we going to practice these things at home? You do have a responsibility to keep your daughter safe, period. You can take your daughter and say, we're going to go stay away for 24 hours or 36 hours. As we discussed, would happen if you did X, said Y, et cetera. And as best you can, and this is really hard with somebody, for any of us, right? This is all people in all relationships, to depersonalize things that feel very personal. Like you're in a very intimate moment. You don't have any clothes on. You are leaning in and all of a sudden your wife is starting to experience panic. It's hard not to take that personal. As though, because you want to be the person that brings her calm and peace, not panic. And somehow your body is setting this scary, man, and it's isolating and it feels like it's you're doing something and it's easy to make it all about you. So the best you can, you need to have a counselor. You need to have a group of buddies that you can go talk to and hang out, not to just unload on, but just do stuff with, man, just to expand your world a little bit. But I think you're on the right path. Hang in there. You are married to somebody, you love somebody, you've created a human with somebody who's experienced some profound trauma, and her body is in the process of trying to learn it wasn't safe then, but now it's safe. It's okay now, it wasn't okay then. And that is a tough, tough road to navigate. But if you'll hang in there, I just have too many success stories on the other side of this. Be sturdy. Before her, take care of yourself and keep that kid safe. Thank you for the call, my brother. We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Winter is finally leaving the premises. There's more light, there's more beauty, the flowers and the birds are out. And sometimes when we're surrounded by things that everyone else says we should be so happy for, and it's all so wonderful, and yet we look in the mirror, we don't feel it. And we know that we should be feeling full of energy and excitement, and we should be getting it all done, getting all our work done, connecting deeply in our relationships, dreaming about the future. Our social battery should be full, but maybe it's not. Maybe things still feel heavy, like a long winter hangover. I'm hearing from people all over the world that people are facing and experiencing so many challenges, and everyone's social battery is pretty low. And of course, it's easy to get on your little phone and just scroll and scroll and pick up a bunch of influencer hacks, but maybe you don't need another hack. Maybe you need to talk to someone, especially someone who is trained to listen, trained to walk with you, and help you build self-awareness and create an action plan for what you can do next so that you can recharge your social battery to a full charge. If you are stuck, it might be time to sit with a good friend or a mentor that you trust, or it might be time to try therapy. And I've had seasons in my life where talking to a therapist has made all the difference, and it might make a difference for you. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire, you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time, and they don't charge you anything extra. Visit BetterHelp.com/Deloney today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/Deloney. All right, let's go just north of Oklahoma to Ontario, Canada, and talk to Laura. Hey, Laura, what's up?
Not much. What's up with you?
We're partying, dude.
We're more than just north of Oklahoma.
barely. What's happening?
So I originally wrote this as a budgeting question to be read as like the email of the day on the Dave Ramsey show, and I sent it in.
Okay.
But I guess Jehovah Sneaky has another plan, and Taylor caught me on with you. So we'll see where we go with this. I'm not
really
sure what.
I have learned I can get nothing by Taylor. Kelly, no problem. No problem. Kelly's about as held together as Swiss cheese. Taylor is something else. So she caught you. You're busted. What was the call?
So last year I was diagnosed with depression. Okay. And I also deal with generalized low-level joint pain that comes and goes. And the medical profession isn't sure why, but it has been an exhausting 4 years trying to figure it out.
Sure.
So while I'm generally stable and medicated, I do have seasons, and usually, let's be honest, in the deep, dark, cold Canadian winter, where the wheels fall off of all of my best laid plans. So there are worse days. The worst case is on the weeks or days when I don't want to shower. I go through drive-through, skip the gym, do a little bit of retail therapy. And I end up spending all of my available energy on going to work and walking the dog.
Okay.
But beyond that, I have really nothing left over. So I'm single and in the helping professions. So there's not even anyone at home who can kind of scaffold me into getting some of that basic stuff done. So what I've done is I've put a few key things in place, such as house cleaning and grocery delivery. And during those times, I also prioritize sleep and make sure I do things like get touch from a massage, you know, haircuts, and simply to remain feeling like a human. So all of this is in the realm of reasonable based on my income, but inevitably I spend more on random stuff than I intend. And so by the time the end of a season like March or another downtime rolls around, I usually have a bit of a mess to clean up. Usually that's like emotionally, functionally, like making sure my car is got its brakes checked and stuff like that, and sometimes work-wise. So I have amazing supportive friends, but I always end up feeling like I'm starting fresh all over. So I'm just curious, what are some structures I can put in place to proactively protect myself from myself?
That is a great question. How long have you been wrestling with this?
So I got diagnosed last year, but if I look back, I probably... I had a very good friend who identified that every summer I would lose my job because over the spring I went a little loopy and, you know, productivity or tardiness or any of that kind of stuff. And so we put things in place. I make sure I go visit friends and stuff like that during February and March. So I would say probably my whole life, but specifically and psychologically, like diagnosed last year. After a pretty rough season. So
was there an event that led to you going to see somebody to get diagnosed?
Yes. So our family has been going through some pretty tough stuff. I have a sibling who's dealing with some pretty heavy mental health stuff himself. And then I had sort of a situationship blow up on me, which is never fun, but it was sort of the beginning of hope. And, you know, I'm 48 and single, and, you know, they're talking about like perimenopause and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And so just last year, I think I really just hit a wall, and realized I can't just, because I have a job where I'm doing crisis intervention and all that kind of stuff, it's emotionally heavy. And so by the time I get home, like oftentimes I would just come home at 4 o'clock, walk the dog and go to sleep, and then sleep all day Saturday and sleep all day Sunday. And, you know, so that's not a good way to live.
Sure.
So yeah, that's sort of where I've been dealing with.
And has medication helped?
Tremendously, both for the anxiety and the, depression, as well as all the other medical stuff.
Has it, has it helped? So sometimes the medication will serve as a dampener, right? It just takes the hurt away, right, but it also takes away all the good stuff too. And sometimes it feels like it gets your head above water so you can start swimming again.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you start saying, now I am setting these things, these safeguards in place, I'm going to get massaged, I'm getting my hair done, I'm getting up and showering just so I can feel like a person again. That tells me that it's more the latter, that it's actually helping bring you back to get your head above water so that you can go do the things that you know you need to do.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome. That means
it's been life-changing.
I'm a big advocate for it in those situations.
Yeah.
That the
God works in pharmaceutical ways, right?
Well, I mean, man, that's going to be a slogan for somebody. Well done. Well done.
Right. It's my slogan, but you can use it.
I will never, ever use that slogan. That's good. That's good. But yes, I love being alive in a little sliver of humanity where if I need the help and it's what the help I actually need, man, it's there. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. My season with medication allowed me to go do the things I needed to do to go heal, not to avoid feeling bad, if that makes sense. Right. And there's definitely a difference.
Absolutely.
Anytime somebody tells me that them and their sibling are struggling with a diagnosed mental illness, I always want to make sure I at least ask, what is the ecosystem from where you both came?
Yeah, it was pretty unstable. It was emotionally unstable and chaotic. Like, you know, you hear lots of stories and it certainly wasn't that. And I know we're not comparing traumas, but it was like unstable, very high emotional. You know, I had an extroverted father or an introverted father in sales and an extroverted mother who stayed home with the kids quite reluctantly. So we, and my brother has always had challenges. So it was pretty unreliable emotionally as well as like logistically, even though it was, you know, we never did without food. We never did without, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Tell me about your reluctant mom.
Oh, I didn't want to do that, but, my mom is a bit of a force of nature. She's extroverted and she, you know, just the time of history when I was born.
God, you are talking so many great circles around this. Just tell me about your mom.
No, well, I'm just saying, so she wanted to work and my dad didn't want her to, and she, wanted to be more than just a stay-at-home mom. And so, and she and my dad are both, they find it very difficult to talk about emotional things. And I almost died as a baby. So I think that really, got into the ecosystem and the DNA of the house. And my brother was a bit of an emotional terrorist for all of us. Okay. So it was my mom. Yeah, my mom is a bit scattered and capable, but not really doesn't think ahead, and so that, you know, that put us in some what I felt were precarious positions, even though they really weren't when I look at it. But as a 6-year-old, thinking you're going to go to jail because your mom didn't buy tickets to the train because she thought she could do that on the train, and then ends up she can't. So she gets off the train at the next station, and then the train starts moving, right? So that's pretty scary.
Well, and the way you mitigate that is to grow up with some very clear plans on how things are going to go.
100%.
And if you're working in medical trauma, that means you're very smart, and in combination with very smart, you worked your butt off. And you made it happen. You checked every box and you dotted every I, crossed every T. You solved for every variable.
Right.
Except for that one damn one about I'm going to have a family and be married and it's going to look like this.
Yeah.
And often, in that home that you just described, the one thing nobody's allowed to do is grieve.
Mm-hmm.
You're not allowed to be sad.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're sad, when you just are just, when you just spend a season grieving, it was supposed to be this way, or I really wanted it to be this way, and this is what it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
You end up with frantic activity. You end up with I'm gonna strip the world of every variable possible so that I can control everything. And both mm-hmm. of those end up with people around you completely burned out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't spend time grieving
mm-hmm.
as a regular spiritual practice or emotional or psychological practice, mm-hmm. eventually, you put it in just a deep, dark enough environment, it will shut you down. Your body will. It'll turn the lights off.
Yes.
Is that fair?
And that was my fall, last fall.
Okay.
It was very much lamenting and grieving and doing all that stuff.
So What if we flipped around? You have a narrative that you're not, that your body's busted. It's not, it's not working right. I don't think that's accurate. I think your body's exhausted. Because it's been propping up Laura for about 42 years.
Eight, but yes.
Mm-hmm. No. I'll give you, like, you were about six till all the wheels started falling off.
Yeah.
At six, you learned, oh, mom just gets off the train.
Mm-hmm.
I got to be in control here.
Mm-hmm.
And you've heard me say this a million times on this show, Laura, that was never your six-year-old you's job.
Mm-hmm.
Your job was to hold mom's stable, sturdy hand and be bonkers on that train.
Mm-hmm.
Being in a relationship has been hard romantically, hasn't it?
Yep.
How come?
Oh, probably going after emotionally unavailable men and not having that many options.
Because what's the most terrifying thing to six-year-old Laura?
Well, that the people who are supposed to love me aren't going to prioritize my needs.
What's the most terrifying thing to six-year-old Laura, though? Emotions, feelings, demonstration of.
Yeah, anger and disappointment. And
so you go after robots.
Yeah. And
And that's really, really lonely, isn't it?
Yeah. And frustrating and hurtful and all that stuff.
And so here we are, right? And you're like, I just asked you a question about freaking my budget. Can you get to it?
Hey, I mean, Jehovah's Sneaky and Taylor had a plan, right?
So. Here's the thought I want you to at least hold it loosely. And you're in the care of a physician and a mental health practitioner, so this won't interact with that at all. I want you to hold very loosely this idea that your body's working pretty dang well. And that you're 48 years old. And you've spent almost every moment of your entire life, child and adult life, caring for other people's emergencies. And it's cost you sleep. It's cost you late night anxiousness. I bet you have a hard time. I bet you can spin up, can't you?
Yep.
So it's
like, what do you mean spin up?
Lay, put your head on a pillow and all of a sudden you're like, what about this? What about this? And oh my gosh, I forgot about this. Or do you take care of a patient and then you leave the room and for the, like, did I put it in? Over and over. Listen, your body's working exactly as it should.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually it goes, oh, she's not getting this message. Shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
She's still going. Activate sore back and hurt knees and hurt shoulders. Go. Right?
Right.
It will slow. Your body's so amazing at finding ways to slow you down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's living a completely isolated life. And she says she has good friends, but mostly they just share emojis and texts. We will get her in front of a doctor. And that doctor will have high touch and will look her in the eye and will listen and will connect and will communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Right or wrong?
The key, the details aren't, but the key, the underlying, my friends really, truly are amazing.
Okay. That's good. Okay. Yeah. That makes me happy.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So here's, if you just called me cold and you're one of my buddies and we've already talked about all this stuff and we're just eating nachos, having a drink, whatever, here's what I would tell you. Some things that have saved my life in this transition, and I probably don't overuse that, but I don't underuse it either, is I'm surrounded. I got so many this year. My wife's like, wow, I wake up every morning in a baseball stadium. but I'm surrounded by those 10,000 Lux light boxes. I've been in my bathroom. I've got multiple ones in my kitchen. I've got one down in my gym. I've got one in the morning when I write. I've got them everywhere. Okay.
Right.
That's number one. And that's a whole other podcast if you want to listen to it. In fact, Huberman can talk about it more, but you know about those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
The basic challenges that, and this is just from James Clear stuff, is let's put as many hurdles for unhealthy decisions and let's clear the friction, let's clear the path for the easy ones. What does that look like? Maybe in February, you have your friends over who are amazing and you'll have a party and you log into your Amazon account and one of them changes the passcode until April 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to buy something, you got to go through them. And they have a series of questions they're going to ask you.
Right.
And it's so annoying and it's so frustrating. There was a season I gave my debit card to my wife. I was out of control.
Beautiful.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And you don't have that. Cool. So we're going to have a party where we invite everybody over and it's like, it's going to be the winter hurdles. And like, I've lost my whatever card or my bank card or whatever the thing is. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a friend that will go shopping with me. And we're going to make sure I can get some jelly beans, some Laura. Right. But not
always the jelly beans,
not tons.
Right.
Do you write in the winter?
Yeah, when I'm not doing school stuff, I write in the winter, yeah.
Like you journal to yourself?
Yeah, a little bit. Not as much, but yes.
Okay. I want you to practice something for me. Just try it for 30 days and then write back in to Taylor. And if it's terrible, you're like, Taylor, this is the worst, then she won't tell me. And that way I can just go around with the illusion that everything I say is awesome.
Sure.
Actually, she would love to come running in and be like, you're wrong. You were wrong. I want you to write a letter to yourself on a daily basis. That's not a letter. It's not true. On three to five statements. And it's not going to be gratitude this time. It's going to be, dear Laura, our body's taking care of us like this today. And when your body, when you start to get up and it's like, no, I'm not. What I want you to begin to do is you're going to slowly, minute by minute, inch by inch, line by line in this journal over 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, is I want you to begin to separate yourself from how you feel and what the next right move is. And the way I've learned to do that personally in my life is to say out loud or to write down, my body's trying to love me right now. My body's trying to keep me safe by keeping me in bed. And then I will say, thank you so much, but I got it from here. And I'll get up and, but it's a conversation where I'm separating myself from this intense feeling. And And that in someone who's been diagnosed with depression, most people don't understand that isn't just like a feeling. It is like stuck in concrete, right?
Yeah.
Or worse, it's worse than concrete. Painful. It's like being stuck in honey. Like you're moving, but it's just, bleh, right?
Yeah.
What I have found during the clear moments is when I separate myself, and it was a long arc of a practice, years of, okay, I feel this way, but I'm going to do this.
Right.
And as I begin to peel those apart, that's awesome. And by the way, some days I just sleep in.
Right.
And I don't be like, you suck, you piece of crap, you should have. I think, man, my body must have really needed that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm on to the next.
Mm-hmm.
But that only happens when you stop waking up every moment of your life thinking something's wrong with you instead of thinking, no, my body's trying to take care of me.
Right.
You see what a shift that is?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been fighting my body for a long time.
Yeah, man. Your body's pretty awesome.
Since the moment I was born.
Do what?
Yeah. Since the moment I was born, because I was very ill.
So. Yeah, dude. So think about this. Your body kept you in the game when you were very young, when you were really little. Your body kept you in the game with an unstable kind of family situation. Your body's helped you navigate showing up for people in their darkest moments day after day after day after day. Your body's kept you afloat until last year, living a life, then you had a different picture for what that life was going to be. And that last thing is, at some point, and this isn't today, and this is probably this is 100% with the help of a mental health professional, especially with your depression diagnosis. You're going to have to grieve this picture. I was going to have, my life is going to look like this at 48, at 45, at 40, and it doesn't. It's hard, scary. It's just crushing. And once you metabolize that and you get back in the driver's seat, your body will begin to know, okay, it was supposed to look like this, but it doesn't. Now we get to paint a new picture. All right, what's 58 going to look like? What's 55 going to look like? How do I learn to love men who show emotion and my body doesn't run screaming for the hills because it remembers emotion as unstable, going to leave me on the train? And then you're going to run into some knuckleheaded guy there in Canada and he's going to be like, what do you think about this? And you're going to, your heart's going to flutter. Right? Because he's going to have emotion and feeling and laughter and joy, and it's going to just begin to shift. But it starts with this idea of, I'm not broken, but man, it didn't work out like I thought it was going to. Ugh. So given that reality, what can it look like now? And what do I need to do to get me to that place? And I'm not playing. You guys, you got money. If you're impulse spinning, I'm calling your bluff. How seriously do you want to stop? Give your debit card to somebody. Give a friend or a spouse your Amazon login. Give somebody your internet code, for God's sake, if you have to. But do whatever it takes to put some hurdles so that when you start to impulse buy, you feel it. You acknowledge it. Whew, I need to go for a walk. I need to go do 15 push-ups. I need to go get in a cold shower. I need to do something. Because the feeling is what I'm trying to get rid of. I don't need new junk. I just need that feeling to burn through. And since I've got some hurdles, it's going to be really tough. What are some easier paths forward? Laura, you're awesome. Thank you for the call. Hang on the line. I'm going to send you a couple things. I'm going to send you Own Your Past, Change Your Future, my number one book about dealing and metabolizing and doing the next right thing, dealing with hard things, and then what do we do next? And I'm also going to hook you up with Financial Peace University, my company, Ramsey Solution, the flagship product. It can walk you through these steps on, okay, how do I get a hold of my money? I've made a mess this winter. I'm going to clean the mess up. Then I'm going to head on to the future. And by the way, with FPU will come the Every Dollar app. We're going to hook you up with that for a year, the premium version. You're the best, Laura. Take care. Bye. Hey, what's up? Deloney here. Listen, you and me and everybody else on the planet has felt anxious or burned out or chronically stressed at some point. In my new book, Building a Non-Anxious Life, you'll learn the 6 daily choices that you can make to get rid of your anxious feelings and be able to better respond to whatever life throws at you so you can build a more peaceful, non-anxious life. Get your copy today at johndeloney.com. All right, we're back with Cool Crap That Happened. What's up, Kelly? What I do now?
All right, this is from Rob. Somewhere. I don't know where.
Rob Bass. What was that song called?
It Takes Two to make a thing go right. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, dude.
All right. After hearing about your goal-setting retreats with your wife, my wife and I were inspired to do the same. So we downloaded your planning sheets from the show notes a while ago. We did our homework, and we have completed the first 2 days. What a revelation. We are the parents of 9 kids.
Whoa.
So our communication with each other has suffered over the years. Yesterday, we had more serious, enjoyable, positive conversation than we have had in a long time. My wife has never been able to answer me when I asked her, how best can I love you today? That changed yesterday when I told her how important it is for her to give me a roadmap to her heart. She finally understands it's okay to tell me what she needs, and it is not selfish of her to do so. We've got a lot more to discuss, but the weekend getaway certainly is shaping up to be a transformational to our marriage.
Dude, way to go, man. It's pretty awesome. And by the way, hey, good on you for that. But also, my wife and I, we've got our place out in the woods, and we're looking for a place in town. And my wife has been looking at houses. Then I'll go look at houses. And we've been looking at maps and looking at schools, a whole thing. And she was gone the last week, and she came back into town, and I had some time just me and my knuckleheaded little dog, and the kids were gone. Everybody was gone. And I said, hey, I haven't been super clear as we're looking at these things. I don't think I'm a this kind of person for this particular neighborhoods, these particular suburbs. I'm either a this or a this. And I watched her just go, oh, thank God. And she said, if you noticed, I've been looking at only houses at the very end of X and Y and Z neighborhoods or whatever, because I really want to be here. And so I tell you that to tell you this. this isn't something you just do once and you nail it. This is something that becomes a part of the rhythm of your home. And I do this for a living and I teach this for a living. And I still almost made a really expensive decision just because it was easier than mining. Why is my body reacting to this so bad? Why does it not want to live here so bad? And so rest assured, you're going to have this conversation. I'm so proud of you, dude. What was that dude? Rob Bass. It does take two to make 9 kids. Golly, that's a lot of kids. But it's going to be a part of your, if you allow it, it's going to be part of your marriage on and on and on. And quite honestly, that's what makes marriage so rad, is the constant learning and more learning and more learning. And then you get to go do it. It's awesome. And I didn't mean that kind of do it, but you know what I mean. You're just gonna eyeball me on that one, Kelly?
I don't really think there's a lot for me to say.
Man, that was a clutch. Leave me hanging there. Well done, Kelly. Well done. Love you guys. Bye.